And we are joined now by Susan Brown of the Chapel Hill Public Library.
Yay!
Yay!
Because it's Wednesday.
Because it's Wednesday,
and
we're talking
books.
That's
how you know what day it is. Yes. I'm sitting here.
I was disappointed last week that you weren't here because I needed you to come in and pick us all up after the horrible election.
Let you down.
It wasn't as bad as Deb Stroman on Monday, where she called in and we had a little bit of a phone glitch. So I said, okay, so you know we're talking about sports, and we've always talked about how sports can help heal the country and bring us all together. So just give us a little bit of optimism. How can sports heal the country after this election? And because there was a technical glitch, there was just 5 seconds of dead silence. I'm like, oh God, it's worse than I thought.
Not even sports
can bring us together. The Cubs won the World Series, and it's so long ago now.
That's right. Yeah. It does seem like long ago now.
Right? It's like only a couple of weeks. The curse ended, but now we don't even think about it anymore.
Right?
Anyway, how are you?
So, I'm doing well. I was listening to your guest just on before me. We also are a dementia-friendly business.
It's a really good thing to be, I think.
I thought the training was awesome.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting for me because my mom was a nurse, mm-hmm. and for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, she ran what was called the Skilled Ward, which was the Dementia and Alzheimer's Ward. So I would hang out there, and I got to know them, and I got to see sort of the treatment side of it.
Oh, wow.
And then thinking about the caregivers in the training and everything. But really what spoke to me, we trained our staff thinking we're public-facing, we're going to interact with these folks, how might we provide them a great experience? And in the training, they said that one thing they always tell places is, remember, the person facing dementia isn't giving you a hard time. They're having a hard time.
Yes.
And that was like mind-blowing for us because that's probably true for just about everybody. Sure, there's the 1% that's cranky that are just there to give you a hard time, but probably almost everybody, they're just having a hard time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of it might be our doing because of something that doesn't function, or they can't find a staff person, or the book isn't here. I don't know. So it was a great training, and it was also just raised our empathy level for everybody.
For everyone.
Really. Except for that little 1% cranky people.
Yeah. We can always be mad at the 1%.
Right?
Yeah.
But everybody else. Yeah, it was a great training.
It's
so
good.
We
it's
are,
totally worth going through.
Yeah, and I saw you've got the sticker too now.
We've got the sticker. Yep, we went through it a couple of weeks ago. I've completely lost track of time. It was before the election, so it could be 2 weeks ago or two years ago.
Right,
it was here. It was here, so it was within the last month. But really important to go through. So thanks to them again for coming by a second time. So what are we talking about today? We've got Meet the Author Tea coming up.
Tomorrow.
Yes.
So that was the inspiration for our theme today, which is super nerdy nonfiction that's also really readable.
Yes.
Because I know you like super nerdy nonfiction. I'm just not sure it's readable.
I love readable nerdy nonfiction. I don't know what you're talking
readable
about. Let me just scratch off this first one on my list.
I can take the whole show if
No, I've got a lot of really good ones here.
So I am always excited when it's Meet the Author Tea Day because Milano's.
Ooh.
I mean, because of the authors.
You know, Milanos are available at every supermarket in America now,
but they
right?
have every flavor there.
We're getting a Wegmans in a couple of years. They might have Milanos there, too.
I love Wegmans.
Yeah?
I could do a whole Wegmans show. I've only been to one once. It was last year. It was a transformational experience.
All right.
Seriously, Wegmans is something.
So look forward to it.
Forward to that.
Cool. Anyway, Henry Petrosky, and because you said Milano's, and I said Wegmans might have Milano's.
So if you come to the library, meeting room B, tomorrow at 3:30, you can have some tea, maybe some coffee, some Milano cookies, as well as some other cookies. And then at 4 o'clock, you can listen to Henry Petrosky, who
is,
I'm super excited about him. That's why I'm actually excited.
So tell us about Henry Petrosky. He's a Duke professor.
He's a professor of civil engineering, mm-hmm. and he's also got a dual appointment or a secondary appointment as a professor of history. You'll hear him on Wall Street Journal or see him in Wall Street Journal, hear him on NPR, different places. He writes about how stuff works, basically.
Yes.
It's sort of design and engineering. His new book that he's coming to talk about tomorrow is called The Road Taken, wait for it. Here's the subtitle. The History and Future of America's Infrastructure.
Dun dun.
Right?
Nice.
It's super exciting. People are just like, no infrastructure? Okay, so this is such a cool book.
Yeah.
It's such a cool book. So he talks about, I am always a person who, when I'm driving on the interstates, mm-hmm. I'm like, how did they do this?
How did they do this?
How did they figure it out?
And how did they connect it? Build it all in such a short period of time,
right?
too? Because, you know, you're always sitting there complaining about a construction project that takes a year to fix this, like, one tiny little stretch of road.
National
they built
interstate
the whole
system.
Interstate system in, like, 2 years. It's ridiculous.
Blows my mind.
Do you know about Glenwood Canyon in Colorado?
No.
I think it's I-70, right? That runs through. I think it runs through Kansas as well, and then goes into Colorado,
yeah.
right?
70 does, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And through the Rockies, you know, it's hard enough to build an interstate that runs through the Rocky Mountains, but there's a canyon, Glenwood Canyon, which is I think it's also the Colorado River. So eventually, that just snakes down and becomes the Grand Canyon. But Glenwood Canyon in the Rockies was this unbelievably impossible engineering project, and it took them forever to figure out how are we going to put a road through this canyon, and they figured out a way to do it. I mean, otherwise there was just no way to connect one side of the Rockies to the other, but they figured out a way to do it.
Out,
and
right? Engineers.
Like, and it's a gorgeous road. Yeah. Like, you're driving right through the canyon. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So his book looks at infrastructure, whether it's bridges, roads, tunnels,
yes.
all of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks at the past, so he's got there's a whole lot of photographs in it. He looks at the future and sort of the policy issue-based thinking of what do we need to do about infrastructure. He's also got a segment in this book where it's this great narrative approach where he looks at his street and he sort of breaks down the curbs
nice.
And the stormwater, you know, drains and the recycling bins and the stripes and all of it and sort of how it all works. So he's a really great writer. Some of his other books, he wrote a book about the pencil and the history of the design of the pencil
nice.
As we know it, which is pretty cool. He also wrote a book about the history of, it's called The Book on the Bookshelf, and it's all about how we've stored books over time, from
awesome.
Having them chained down, you know,
yeah,
back
yeah.
cover down
right,
in
right.
medieval years and all of that. So he's a really great writer. He's an absolute gem. It's, I mean, even though he's a Duke,
yeah.
we will welcome
we'll
him.
We'll still welcome him nonetheless.
And he will be amazing. And that is tomorrow at 4 o'clock. If you want to come for Milano's, if I don't eat them all first, please come at 3:30. It's a great program by our great friends group. I'm super excited.
It's going to be fun. So you always have it at 4 in the afternoon on a weekday, though. I can never go because I'm all the way over here. Can you have friends of the library here one day, or
what
we can all just get
do
together?
Is get him and to come down.
We should.
And be on the air.
That
we should
would be
start
good.
Doing that with all the.
We
all
should.
We should
yeah.
do that.
We should.
Every
yes.
time they book a meet the
Every
author,
time
they
would
have
the
to
author?
Come here at 3.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, yeah, do that. Be
or,
with.
Or afterwards.
Or afterwards.
Way.
Yeah, but probably 3. Yeah, that would be great. Bring
make
the author,
a note
bring some Milanos and some coffee,
that.
Bring
right.
it to me so that I can eat them. We'll talk to the author and whatnot, and then you can. You can send them over. I like it.
Let's do it.
We're doing it. All right,
okay.
cool. So, nerdy nonfiction books that are fun to read.
Yes.
I've got a bunch. Oh, you want me to start?
Do
okay,
it.
Cool. So, in the wake of the election, I have been concerned, and I've said this on the air, I've said it on social media and a number of places, I am concerned about the potential loss of America's pluralistic value, right? The idea that America is a country where everyone is welcome, everyone is included, everyone is wanted, and everyone has a place at the table, regardless of whether you are white or black or Middle Eastern or Native American or South Asian or Southeast Asian or anything else, regardless of whether you're gay or straight or lesbian or bisexual or transgender, regardless of whether you are Christian or Jewish or Muslim or atheist or agnostic, regardless of whether you're liberal or conservative or communist or anarchist or libertarian or anything in between, we are defined by the fact that everyone has a place at the table. And that is something that I am very worried about in the future, not even just with Donald Trump, but with people interacting with each other, with us interacting with other people. That's something that we need to be extra concerned about protecting. So I've got a bunch of books about the history of that idea in America. The first one I want to mention is a book by Roger Smith. He is Rogers with an S, Rogers Smith. He's a great guy. He is a professor at Penn. I think he still is. This book was written in 97. It's called Civic Ideals. And Civic Ideals is a book about American identity. And he talks about American identity as being sort of tripartite, threefold. There's three of them.
The executive, the legislative, and the...
and the judiciary. There's that.
Right.
But what he's talking about, and federal, state, and local. It's a 9-part grid. But
nerd.
Right.
I mean, I love that about you.
I just said the word tripartite. That just defines me as a nerd. Roger Smith says there are three types of American identity. There's liberalism, so we all believe in the idea of freedom. There's republicanism, so we all sort of share institutions like the Constitution and Congress and the American flag and symbols and all of that. And then there's what he called ascriptive Americanism, which is the idea that American identity is defined by being white or being Christian or being sort of demographically something or other. All three of those identities are interplaying with each other constantly over the course of American history. Sometimes some of them rise or sometimes some of them fall. We celebrate some, we downplay others, but Civic Ideals is a book about the history of that interplay and that constant conflict between all of those different sources of American identity. It's a great book and everyone should read it.
Civic Ideals.
Ideals.
Yep. Ideals by Roger Smith.
That
sounds very
Civic
good.
Ideals. Yep.
Okay.
That's my first one.
All righty.
I will note that I have already scratched Federalist 10 off the list. Which I would recommend for exactly the same reason, but it's dry and dull, so I'm just gonna wipe that out. So
okay.
Go for it.
So my next one, nerdy nonfiction that's readable. So these are still a thing, but there was a while when what were called micro histories were really hot. And these books came out where authors take one thing and mm-hmm. just delve deeply into it. And I think the king of those is Mark Kurlansky. So he nerds out heavily on one topic and writes these wonderful books about it. So he wrote a book about called Salt, A World History.
Oh, yeah.
Such a good
book. That's a
good
book, yes.
And he goes from the history of salt as a preservative to the salt trade to salt mining in China to the Morton Salt girl now.
Yep,
which is really great. He wrote one called Cod about the fish.
Yes. Was he also the one who wrote Longitude? Was that
no,
or was that
a different
Davis
guy? Sobel.
Okay,
that was a woman.
Okay.
But actually, she was probably one of the first ones to have that sort of,
framed
out
kind of thing.
Or
yeah.
tightly framed.
That's a good book.
Kurlansky wrote a book about the oyster, history on the half shell, the big oyster. Then he did, he took the same idea and did it for 1 year. So he wrote 1968, The Year That Rocked the World. That's all about that year.
Nice.
His newest one is Paper. Paging Through History, and it's all about the history of paper from various sort of perspectives. So for nerdy nonfiction that's super readable, Mark Kurlansky and all of his sort of one-off micro histories.
Awesome. All right. I'm going to bounce off of Civic Ideals and go to just sort of an American history book in general. This is one, it's incredibly well written. It is a history, like when we read American history books, we have a tendency to focus on white people. We have a tendency to focus on Washington and Jefferson and Lincoln and Roosevelt and Kennedy and, you know, the presidents who are all, almost all white. We have a tendency to focus on sort of the Western European immigration experience and everything else. So there is an author, he's Japanese American, his family's been here since the 19th century. Which is actually the topic of chapter one. The author's name is Ronald Takaki, Takaki. The book is called A Different Mirror, and it is just a retelling of American history from the perspectives of minority groups. Mm. And the whole point of his book here is that he doesn't focus on a particular minority group, because you'll see some that focus on the African-American experience or the LGBT experience or the Jewish experience or something like that. His focus is just to try to encapsulate all of it. So it's really comprehensive. It's really good. It's about racial minorities, religious minorities, ethnic minorities, and just retelling American history from that lens, so we get an entirely different perspective on what American history was and what it looked like.
Is it a recent book?
It is 1994, I think. It came out about 20 years ago. So it hasn't covered the last 20 years, unfortunately.
Tell me the title again?
A Different Mirror?
A Different Mirror.
Yeah, really good. I'm just starting to reread it again today, actually.
Okay.
So that's my second one.
The next author that I want to talk about, and again, she nerds out on very specific, like different things for each book, but mm-hmm. she makes them so readable. And it's like, I never knew that I wanted to know all of this information about this topic.
Yeah.
And that author is Candace Millard. I may have talked about her before. She wrote for, I think, National Geographic and some magazines, and she only brings out a book every couple years because she spends a lot of time doing research. So the first book, she's written three books. The first one is called River of Doubt, and it is, sorry, it's got a great subtitle. I've got all three up here. Hang on. River of Doubt, Theodore Roosevelt's Darkest Journey.
Ooh.
So it's a biography of when Theodore Roosevelt went into uncharted territory in the Amazon, and he set out on this grand adventure.
Wow.
And it's really, really great. I mean, everybody knows of, you know, Teddy Roosevelt as this rough writer and all of
explore
that.
Explore and whatnot, yeah.
This is a really sort of... this is after he lost the bid for the White House in 1912.
Yes.
And he sort of goes on this journey to sort of forget it all and try something new. And you get a little bit into the psychology of him, but also the actual adventure of being on uncharted territory.
Awesome.
Territory down the Amazon in 1912. She's a great writer. Her next book is called Destiny of the Republic, A Tale of Madness, Medicine, and Murder of a President. This is about James Garfield.
Yes.
And the whole assassination and the medical history there. And it's all about science at the time, the presidency, the crisis, the assassination, all of that.
The fact that this was the most preventable death of all time.
Right.
And the doctors screwed up over and over again.
Yep. Exactly. Yep, so yep, you get into just, I mean, there's some pretty gross stuff about how medicine happened then, and surgery non-sterile stuff. It's so good.
Yeah.
And then she's got a new book out called Hero of the Empire, The Boer War, A Daring Escape, and The Making of Winston Churchill. So first of all, she's got great titles.
Yeah, she does.
And these great subjects that people think they know, Teddy Roosevelt and Churchill, and she looks at sort of lesser known chapters in their lives. So this is looking at Churchill when he was 24 and his sort of exploits and adventures in the Boer War.
Very cool.
Really, really good stuff. Nerdy, super readable.
Nice. All right. I've got James Marone's Hellfire Nation as my last one. James Marone is another sort of political historian. He's out of UVA, I think. And his book, he's got a couple of really good ones, but my favorite is called Hellfire Nation, and it is all about, again, a retelling of American history, but it's all about how the moments in American history when the federal government has expanded its power the most, is like this ballooning of federal power and federal sort of intrusion into people's lives, has come almost invariably as a result of religious / moral crusades. My favorite example of this is the Hays Code in the 1930s, which, mm-hmm. you know, people were upset about sex in movies. And then for the next 30 years, we had this very stringent, strictly enforced code where you couldn't talk about sex. You couldn't show like blood in violence. People would just get shot and go like, and fall down. But there couldn't be any sex. The bad guy could never win. There always had to be happy endings, like just really, really strict rules. And then there was another one, very strict censorship of the mail, which came as a result of this moral crusade that got launched with, I don't know, some wild, it's been a little while since I read the book, but some wild rumor about this sort of immoral material that was being circulated through the mail, and people got up in arms about it, and they created this whole new position in the federal government of overseeing the mails and censoring the mail and keeping people from mailing things back and forth. Yeah, it's an incredible book.
But how did they know?
They looked. They
but
searched.
But that's a federal offense.
Now it is. Yeah.
That's
not
really
if you're the federal government.
What's
and
it called?
Apparently Hellfire Nation.
It's a great title,
such
too.
Such a good title. Yeah, really good book. Worth checking out. So that's mine. What do you got?
I'm done.
You're done?
Everybody, well, I mean, I could talk more. everybody should come see Henry Petrosky. I was just trying to think of all of his books, so I pulled it up. Man, he wrote a book about the history of the toothpick, the technology and culture behind the toothpick.
That's incredible.
This guy's amazing. He writes a lot about engineering, a lot about success and failure and design and toothpicks and books and infrastructure. Everybody should come tomorrow, 4 o'clock, 3:30 if you want a snack.
Sounds good. Or 3:25 if you want a snack, because otherwise the Milanos will be gone.
I'm at 3:55 if you want a snack.
The other cookies will still be there. The Milanos will have gone earlier in the morning.
I'm kind of like a squirrel. I stuff them in my cheeks for later. But they're kind of oblong. So they also have orange ones, which I didn't think I would like. I like all the Milanos.
Do you have these author things only for the cookies?
Of course not. It's for the knowledge and the sharing and the friendship.
You should encourage him to write a history of the cookies.
Yeah, the history of the Milano.
The history of the Milano. There you go. Yes. It was invented on a farm called Pepperidge not so long ago. All right, we got to let you go. Susan Brown, thank you so much. 3:30 tomorrow, by the way, Henry Petrosky, Friends of the Library. The talk starts at 4. The snacks begin at 3:30, so head over there tomorrow.